The outlaws were on their way to afternoon school. "I think," said William, "that when I grow up, I'm probably going to turn into one of those people that talk."
"You're one of them now," said Ginger dispassionately.
"But I don't get paid for it," objected William. "Grown-ups get paid for it."
"Oh, lecturers," said Henry.
"Yes, them," said William. "I'm going to be one of them. I bet I can talk as well as anyone."
"What'll you talk about?" said Douglas. "You've got to have something to talk about, haven't you?"
"Oh, you can talk about anything," said William. "Doesn't matter what you talk about, so long as you keep on talking and chucking people that start interrupting out. You give me something to talk about and see if I can't go on talking about it for hours and hours."
Henry stopped and slung his school satchel from his shoulders. "I've got my dictionary here," he said. "I'll open it just anywhere and give you the first word I see to talk about."
He opened his dictionary and read out slowly, "Civilization." "Oh, I know what that means," said William. "It means being different from savages."
"Well, can you talk about it?"
"Yes. What you said, being different from savages, it's all wrong."
"Why is it wrong?"
"Well, that's what I'm just going to tell you. It is wrong. School and lessons and such like. Savages didn't have them."
"How do you know they didn't?"
"Because there wasn't anything for them to learn. Euclid and algebra hadn't been born in those days. And I wish you'd shut up interrupting. If it was a real lecture, you'd have been chucked out by this time."
"All right, come on, chuck me out."
They met joyously in the middle of the road, with Ginger and Douglas as seconds. They were enjoyably engaged and might have continued indefinitely if at the corner of the road that led to school they hadn't met the little girl. She was a stranger to the neighbourhood. None of the outlaws had ever seen her before. She was small and dainty, with dark eyes and a round, dimpled face. William was not, on the whole, susceptible to feminine charm. Passing this little girl, he was conscious only of an overwhelming desire to talk to her. He wanted to talk to her about civilization. He longed to perform some striking deed of valour before her. But she passed him with a look of cold disdain.
"I've had an invitation to tea for you tomorrow, William," said his mother when he returned from school.
"Where?" said William, without enthusiasm.
"Mrs. Stacy. She's got a little niece staying with her."
William's heart leapt. He was sure that it was the little girl. But without relaxing an atom the severity of his expression, he said,
"I don't want to go to tea with a girl."
"Oh, she's got a little boy staying with her too, the son of an old school friend who's convalescing after measles. He's just about your age, I believe."
"Huh," said William shortly.
But in reality, he was already alone with the little girl. He was talking to her on every subject from beginning to end of Henry's dictionary. She listened, enraptured.
But when he went to tea with her, it was quite different. The boy was such a boy as William had never even imagined. He was tall and languorous. He spoke with an exaggeratedly refined accent, and he talked of his travels in Italy and the south of France, of the theatres he'd visited, and the latest dances. And the little girl admired him. The little girl listened to him as in William's dreams she had listened to William. She ignored William completely after one disdainful glance. William wasn't used to being ignored.
If only she could hear him lecture.
"Civilization's all wrong," he began firmly. "Savages didn't go to school or learn Latin, and they..."
But she wasn't listening to him. She was listening to Claude, who was talking about Nice.
"There's Topping bathing there," he was saying, "and some jolly drives over the hills behind the town."
She was gazing at him, enraptured. William was silent for a moment.
"I'm a lecturer," he announced. "I give lectures to people, roomfuls of them, chuck them out when they start arguing."
But neither of them paid the slightest attention to him.
"They say," the languorous youth was saying, "that the polka's coming back." "I hope not. Ghastly affair."
William summoned his faculties again.
"I killed a lion once," he said in a loud voice.
They took no notice of him. He raised his voice still further.
"Shot it straight through the heart, just as it was going to spring."
The little girl became aware, apparently for the first time, that he was speaking. She turned to him, and the look of adoration with which she had regarded the languorous youth changed to one of distaste.
"I wish," she said distantly, "that you wouldn't shout so."
So amazed was William at this treatment that he hardly spoke again till it was time to go home. Yet so perverse is human nature that he felt his soul would know no rest till the little girl had looked at him as she looked now at the languorous youth, until he had expounded to her at full length his lecture on civilization. 2 days later, William was still without a plan, when his mother announced that Mrs. Stacy had asked him to tea again. "It's little Cynthia's last day with her," she said. William groaned, but he was secretly much elated by the invitation. He felt that fate was giving him one more chance. He was told the exciting news as he was on his way to Mrs. Stacy's. A lunatic had escaped from the asylum just beyond Croom Woods. The keepers were out searching the woods for him. William hastened to announce this thrilling piece of information, and the result fulfilled his highest expectations. The little girl lost all interest in the attractions of Nice and the latest dances. Her only interest was the escaped lunatic. She insisted on going to the edge of the wood to peer fearfully through the railings. "They murder people," she said impressively. "All escaped lunatics murder people."
"They're very cunning, too," said Claude. "It's very hard to catch them once they've escaped."
Claude spoke as one having a long and exhaustive familiarity with escaped lunatics. The little girl hung on to Claude's words. The whole situation was suddenly more than William could bear. He took out his penknife with a flourish and examined it ostentatiously. They stared at him. Casually, he remarked, "Seems sharp enough. I may not need it anyway. He may come quiet once I catch him." He leapt over the railings and swaggered off through the trees into the wood. The little girl called out, "William, come back. He'll kill you." There was fear and pleading in her voice. It was balm to William's soul. When, however, he'd advanced so far into the woods to be no longer visible to them, his heart began to fail him. He was alone in a wood with a dangerous lunatic. But after a brief inward struggle, he strode forward. On turning a bend in the tiny track among the trees, he ran into a tall, red-haired man wearing leggings and carrying a stick. William was on the point of turning to run when the man said, "Hello, you've not seen anyone about here, have you?"
"No," said William, and added with relief, "You're looking for the lunatic?"
"Yes," said the man.
"I'm one of the attendants from up there." I'll stay with you and help look," offered William.
He felt unspeakably grateful for the protection that the presence of this large red-headed man would afford if they met the lunatic.
"What's he like?" said William. "Is he dangerous?"
"Oh, I should just think he is," said the man. "He'd make mincemeat of you as soon as look at you."
"Huh," said William. "It'd take more than him to make mincemeat of me."
Then, after a slight pause, "Are there many of you looking for him?"
"There's one or two more, but he likes me. He thinks I'm his aunt."
They were walking down the path, looking among the bushes as they went.
"Oh, he's not a bad chap," went on the red-headed man. "Not as bad as some of them. He's closely related to the Emperor of China."
"Is he?" said William, impressed.
"Yes. Makes him difficult to deal with sometimes. He has to have birds' nests and bamboo to eat."
"Crumbs," said William.
Suddenly the man stopped and pointed through the trees.
"There he is," he whispered. "Look at him. He's got hungry and he's looking for birds' nests."
William peered through the wood. Another man could be seen some distance away, looking among the bushes.
"How are you going to get him?" said William, breathless with excitement. He was drawing out from his penknife the thing to get stones from a horse's hoof so as to be ready for any emergency. "We've got to use cunning," said the red-headed man. "It's no use attacking him straight off. He's got the strength of 10 men, especially when he's not been overeaten on birds' nests and bamboo. Tell you what, he knows me, and he doesn't know you. Now, he's the sort of man what believes everything you tell him. If you go up to him and say that he's a keeper, he'll believe he is a keeper, and you can tell him that I'm the one what escaped, and you found me, and he'll come over here to catch me, and then I'll catch him. See?"
The idea appealed to William. He chuckled and set off through the trees. As he approached, the man straightened himself.
"Hello," he said to William. "What are you doing here?"
"You're the attendant from the asylum looking for the lunatic, aren't you?" said William persuasively.
"I am," said the man. "Have you seen him?"
The simple success of this plot delighted William so much that he could hardly keep his face straight.
Yes, he said. I've got him. He's just over there.
The man followed William to where his new friend stood waiting. He laid a hand on William's new friend's shoulder and blew a whistle.
Now, come on, Charlie, he said kindly to the red-headed man. Come along back with me. You know it's far nicer at home than out here. It's cold out here. It's going to rain in a minute.
Did you find any birds' nests to eat? Said the red-headed man with interest.
Oh, yes, lots, said the other man. You come back with me and I'll tell you all about it.
William looked from one to the other, and for the first time, a doubt came to him. There was something terribly sane-looking about the man who'd just come up. Other keepers were coming up in answer to the whistle. One of them approached the red-headed man and said,
I say, Charlie, the Emperor of China's giving a party. He wants to know if you're coming to it.
Are there birds' nests to eat?
Said the red-headed man majestically.
Hundreds of them, said the keeper.
The red-headed man considered for a moment and finally bowed graciously and said,
All right, I'll come. Lead the way.
And they went off arm in arm. The other keepers were surrounding William and congratulating him. Someone gave him 5 shillings.
Oh, I just thought I'd have a shot at trying to find him, said William carelessly. I found him almost at once, and then I just walked on with him, humouring him, till we met a keeper. I knew he was a lunatic, all right.
One of them escorted him back to Mrs. Stacy's and handed him over to his hostess with an account of his exploit. They found the little girl sobbing. It appeared that she'd been sobbing ever since William had gone into the wood.
Oh, I wasn't a bit nice to him, she'd sobbed. I was horrid to him, and now he's gone and got killed. I know he's got killed. He's got killed by a lunatic.
She listened open-mouthed to the story of William's capture. All through tea she gazed at him in mute admiration. William, in the intervals of making a very adequate meal, enlarged upon his adventure.
The minute I saw him, I knew he was a lunatic, of course, he said, speaking through a mouthful of currant bun. He got red hair, and he sort of looked like a lunatic. And then I started humouring him.
Oh, yes, I'll have another bun, thank you.
Well, I kept walking with him and humouring him, talking about birds' nests and bamboo and things like that, same as you do to lunatics.
Thanks, yes, sort of sugar on over there, thanks. Till we came to where we saw Keeper, and then I thought of a very cunning plan. Oh, yes, thanks very much. I'd like a piece of that currant cake. Thank you very much. I thought of a very cunning plan. I sort of made him think that he was the keeper and the other the lunatic.
Yeah, I'm very good at humouring lunatics, so he believed it. And so I sort of got them together, and the real keeper got him. They thought it was a jolly clever thing to do, but didn't seem very clever to me. Oh, yes, thanks very much. I'll have one of those biscuits. I mean, there doesn't seem much in just catching a lunatic to me.
Oh, William, sighed the little girl. I think you're wonderful.
I remember when we were staying in Nice, began Claude.
But the little girl said impatiently, without even looking at him,
Oh, Claude, do be quiet.
Then, sinking her voice to tenderness again,
Do tell us all about it again, William.
And William stretched out his hand for a jam tart and told them all about it again. When it was time for William to go home, the little girl decided to accompany him. Claude retired sulkily to listen to the wireless. William and the little girl set off together down the road.
I'm so sorry I'm going home tomorrow, William, she said.
Uh-huh, said William distantly, as from immeasurable heights of heroism.
I shall miss you awfully.
Uh-huh, said William again. He was alone with the little girl. He could talk to his heart's content about civilization, about anything. She would listen with awe and reverence. She wouldn't interrupt. Quite suddenly, all his desire to talk to her faded. He realized that without interruption, it wouldn't be any fun at all. He looked down at the little girl's face. It was raised to his alight with adoration. And quite suddenly, he discovered that her charm for him had completely vanished. It was her disdain of him that had made her so desirable in his eyes. They were just passing Mr. Moss's sweet shop. His hand closed over the 2 half-crowns in his pocket. With a murmured excuse, he disappeared inside to reappear a few minutes later with a paper bag.
Bullseyes, he explained tersely. Big uns. They last for miles.
He handed her one. It was gigantic. He took one himself. Their lips could not quite close over them. Conversation, for some minutes at any rate, was quite impossible. William walked on in enforced but quite enjoyable silence. A rosy haze of content was upon his spirit. He'd soon be home. Ginger would be waiting for him. They'd have time for a game before bedtime. He was already forgetting the past, except as food for the future. Lunatics and gamekeepers. It would make a jolly fine game. The little girl spoke with an effort through her bullseye.
What are you going to be when you grow up, William?
William considered the question in silence for a minute. He didn't want to be a lecturer, after all. He was tired of it already. It was a jolly good bullseye. The best he'd ever tasted. He made up his mind suddenly.
Keep a sweet shop,
he said, indistinctly.